There are so few biographies on African American women, and that is why it's such a pleasure to feature historian Dr. Tara T. Green on our show.
Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Dr. Green has just released a biography about Alice Dunbar Nelson. Alice Dunbar Nelson was a prolific writer, educator, and social activist. And as a queer, liberated race woman, Dunbar Nelson challenged all types of oppression, as well as influenced the Harlem Renaissance. And so if you have an interest in American history, social justice, African-American women's activism, and or literature, you will enjoy the discussion today with Dr. Green. And make sure you purchase her book, for you're going to enjoy that too. Dr. Tara T. Green is a professor of African-American and African Diaspora Studies at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, where she teaches literature and gender studies courses. She is from the West Bank of New Orleans and is a graduate of Dillard University, a historically Black college and university, and Louisiana State University. Dr. Green is also the author of See Me Naked, Black Women Defining Pleasure During the Interwar Era. Hi, Professor Green. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to have you here. And especially with this being Black History Month, although here at the Empowerment Zone, we celebrate Black history 365 days out of a year. But it's great to have you here today in honor of Black History Month because of your great scholarly work on Alice Dunbar Nelson. And so before we get to talking about your book, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background? We always like our guests to tell the audience about themselves. It's a way for us to connect.
Yes, well, thank you. I am a Southern girl from the New Orleans area. I went to Catholic schools there and also went to Dillard University and HBCU.
HBCU represent.
Yes, of course. And that is when I got very interested in wanting to study African-American literature. And so I went on to LSU, got a PhD, and have taught at universities in Louisiana, Southern University, another HBCU. Mm-hmm. I taught in Arizona, and I am now at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And I am in the African American Studies program here.
All right, a product of an HBCU for our audience that is historically Black colleges and universities. And Dillard is one of our outstanding colleges in Louisiana. So can you tell us, how did you become interested in literature at Dillard?
Well, I came from a background of storytellers. Mm-hmm. And so I was just fascinated when they would talk about their childhood. And it was not an easy childhood. My mother's side of the family is from rural Louisiana, and my dad's side of the family is from rural Mississippi. But when they told those stories, those were times that we would laugh in the ways in which they remembered it. But we also understood that there were hardships as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that that just drew me to literature. When I was a child, I could still remember my mother taking me to get my first library card. And so I always had my head in the books. I'm an only child. And so those books kept me company, and I would continue to want to know more about the experiences of Black people. And that would draw me specifically to looking for work that had been written about Black people and by Black people.
Yeah, isn't it amazing how our family members, the elders, the ancestors really spark our interest in history through storytelling? Many African Americans didn't have the tradition of writing. The tradition was oral history. And I too have some great, great aunts who also shared their stories. And it is the reason why we know the family history is because of these great, great aunts who all, and when you're young, you're like, do I have to hear this again? And now you wish you could remember all of the stories they told. So I hope you are writing those down. But storytelling is a way to get us, it's a way to get us to books and to reading and really exploring our lives through books. So looking at your work on Alice Dunbar Nelson, entitled Love, Activism, and the Respectable Life of Alice Dunbar Nelson, how did you choose her as your subject of interest?
Well, I have Diller University to thank for that. So I was sitting in an American literature course, and one of the assignments was to read a short story by Alice Dunbar Nelson, a writer that I had not heard of before. And her work, quite a bit of her work, although not all of it, is set in New Orleans. And that particular work, and I can't even remember which one it was, but I do remember that it was set in New Orleans. And there I was sitting in New Orleans and had not heard of this woman before. And I remember reading the short biography because this was part of an anthology and finding out that she had graduated from Strait College, which would merge with another institution to become Dillard University. So when I became a professor, I just didn't forget about her. I would teach her work sometimes, but I just didn't forget about her. But she had a remarkable impression on me as a reader and as a person from that area.
So you talk about her making an impression on your life, and what was it about her writings that really impacted you?
I think in reading her work, she has a way in short story form of capturing moments. And so she can zero in on a character, and silences are loud for her. She's known as being a local color writer. And so New Orleans almost becomes another character for her in her work. But she does quite a bit with silence. And so that coupled with a slight description of the character always speaks so much about what I think that she's trying to convey about a particular historical moment.
So when you look at study, you know, one of the challenges we have as African Americans is that a lot of our information isn't written, right? Because we are oral people. How did you go about finding information about her and her work beyond just the her writings?
Mm-hmm. Well, she must have thought that her life was important because she kept quite a bit of work. So she was a pack rat. And her niece, who was a librarian, was a pack rat. So thank God for these pack rats. Mm-hmm. So because she wrote so much there, she almost writes this this fragmented narrative of her life that, of course, I had to put together by doing research that filled in some of the gaps, because there are silences in her archive as well. So It was just an experience of going up to the University of Delaware and seeing these boxes of work nicely filed, and just learning more about what she wanted us to know about her, because surely she must have known that somebody was going to go through this work and that something was going to be done with it. She had done research in certain areas and knew from that experience, I'm sure, how difficult it was to be able to have access to bits and pieces of Black life. So Arturo Schoenberg, and we should know him up at, we know the work that exists up at Harlem because of the work that he did. He was one of her friends. And so when she tried to do her own work, he was one of the people that she reached out to. So she had some models for people putting together collections.
That's great to hear that she left so much written work behind, because many times when we tell the stories and write biographies about people, we end up using information that other people have written versus telling our own stories. So tell us about the book. What do you, and in Alice's life, what is so valuable about her life, and what do you want to convey to the reader?
Well, Alice Dunbar Nelson was born Alice Moore in 1875 in New Orleans. We know who her mother is. There's a mystery surrounding the identity of her father. And I believe that that had an impact on decisions that she would make throughout her life. She was active as a writer and active in the Phyllis Wheatley Club in New Orleans. She was also a teacher, which was why she went to Strait College to get training in that area. And then she would leave New Orleans. She would eventually marry Paul Lawrence Dunbar, where she had an abusive relationship with him, but she did love him. She would leave him, and after he died, she would marry twice more. She also had relationships with women. So throughout this very active social life that she had, which I discuss in the book, she was a suffragist. She was an English teacher. She started organizations, including a chapter of the NAACP. And she remained very active in the Black Club Women's Movement.
So talk about her activism, and for many of our audience may not know what the Black Club Women's Club movement is. Can you talk about her work and her commitment and impact in the Black Women's Club movement?
So the Black Club Women's Movement, Black women's clubs began to emerge in the late 1800s. And those were organizations that Black women put together because they knew that if they networked, if they joined together, that they would be able to improve their condition in their local communities. But then they wanted to go national as well and to organize nationally. And so that would occur also. These were women who wanted to uplift the race. They wanted to focus on strengthening Black families, which of course have been torn apart. They understood the impact of slavery, even for those in the North who may have been second or third generation born free. But these were women who would pool their resources as teachers, as nurses, as people who may have been domestics working in homes. And they may cook meals and sell them and use the money to help to start a school, to open up a clinic. Really, they focus so much on providing resources for the community that they knew that the government was not going to provide, or instead of waiting for a patron, a white patron to help them, they would do it themselves. And so self-sufficiency was really important to Black people during this time, especially these women.
And so who were some of her contemporaries?
Well, Mary Church Terrell may be one of the most well-known. Ida B. Wells. Mm-hmm. in this area, we know Charlotte Hawkins Brown because she started a school that's in Sedalia, North Carolina. So there are so many Black women, all of these women who were well known, but I do want to again emphasize these women whose names we will never know.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, you know, when you look at the Black Women's Club movement, they were all about, like you stated, self-help, lifting up the community, lifting up families, and helping to develop African-American institutions that served African-Americans, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, these women were also really involved in women's suffrage and working to hold our government accountable in terms of their responsibility in the status of Black people. Can you talk about some of her work in terms of how she addressed some of the issues, contemporary issues that were going on? I think this is very important because it's our work here is all about empowerment, right? And we talk about self-empowerment and empowerment of the community.
Yes, well, certainly the suffrage movement was something that was extremely important. We know that there was that famous walk that happened in 1913. But prior to that, there was work leading up to that. And then 19th Amendment doesn't come until about 6 years later. But so what was her role? Well, it was important for her to keep the name Dunbar because mm-hmm. being married to this famous Black writer, Paul Laurence Dunbar, meant that people respected her mm-hmm. Because she had been a wife. And as his widow, she was invited to speak at any number of events. And so she was a speaker who tried to get folks to really men to vote for women to have the right to vote in Pennsylvania. So she was dispatched there, and we have some copies because of her own collecting of newspaper clippings about her speeches. And what we know from that is that she was the kind of speaker that people love to hear and also that people love to see. And by that, I mean, there are descriptions of her her face, her hair, her physique that we would hope that people would not talk about women in that way, but they did. So she was a person who was not only involved with the suffrage movement, but once women got the vote, the right to vote, it also became, at least in the North, by the way, we know about the problems in the South, but she continued to be involved with politics, and women of the Black Club Women's Movement were definitely just because they were successful in one area didn't mean that they stopped. They would continue to press for more. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to get the right to vote? You start to hold your people running for office accountable for addressing the needs of women and especially addressing the needs of Black people. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Black women have played a critical role in terms of the empowerment of the African-American community. And that's, you know, one of the critiques many of us have is that when we talk about Black history, many times we're focusing on men and not really looking at Black men and not really looking at the contributions of African-American women. And that is why it's so important for us to have biographies, right? So that we can explore the lives and contributions as well as the life and legacy of these individuals. So talking about this lady who you talked about her having this really vibrant social life, and you also referred to her sexuality as well. A lot of Black people are afraid to talk about those issues or don't want to address them as if we don't have LGBTQI plus in our community. Can you discuss Alice in that respect?
Yeah, so I had in doing preliminary research, because I didn't know that I was going to write a biography on her. But I knew that before I spent the time of going up to the University of Delaware to look through that collection, that I had to do some preliminary research. And so from that, because this is not something that we would find in a textbook anthology in the biography. So when I did some research, I ran across people saying that she was a lesbian. She was having affairs with women. And I'm like, I don't know if that's true or not, because just because we see it on the internet doesn't make it so. But when I went and I read, particularly in her diaries, the first thing actually that I ran across was letters from a lover. And so then I knew for myself. So and being a researcher, we have to go where the research takes us. And because, you know, I've been asked that question, why are you writing a book about this woman and she's having these affairs and she's doing this, because that was her life. Mm-hmm. And when you're a researcher, you should go in with not this kind of judgment. Mm-hmm. Because what I wanted to do was to talk about her life through her perspective. And that's what I did. She loved women and women loved her. And she loved men. Mm-hmm. That's her life. And so for us to pretend like this is not an experience of people of the past, as my students have said to me, would be a mistake. That means mm-hmm. that we are silencing and making invisible aspects of our history and aspects of our communities, whereas people did important work because they were all important to someone. And we need to acknowledge that and celebrate it as well.
Totally agree with you and your students about the need not to silence people. I'm curious, do you feel like if we weren't in this moment right now where we recognize the LGBTQI experience, do you think you may have omitted that, or what, you know, some people do omit those types of experiences, life experiences. What influenced you to decide to include it?
Well, I wasn't the first scholar to include it. The recovery work was done by Akasha Hull. And so, who's a Black woman scholar. And so she was the first one to be able to excavate that collection before it was actually donated to the University of Delaware. So the cat was already out of the bag, thankfully. So I stand on the shoulders of a Black woman scholar who came before.
Thank you. So let's talk about the why. You know, when you look at developing your audience of people who are readers of this book, why do you think they should read this book? What is so important about the life of Alice Dunbar Nelson that people would want to purchase this book?
Well, certainly because of the activist work that she did. We know so much about specific women. So when I say Ida B. Wells, then people have a sense of who that is. The same, excuse me, with Mary Church Terrell. But there are so many other women, and Alice Dunbar Nelson happens to be one of them. So people who are interested in journalism and editorial writing would be interested, because she was. Members of our community who are LGBTQ should be, I would hope, interested. The fact that she was an activist in so many different areas, fighting for women and fighting for racial equality, and also fighting against violence that Black people will experience, specifically the anti-lynching bill that she wanted to see enacted that we still don't have. and we are still fighting for voting rights. Mm-hmm. And she was a person who fought along with women, men, and white women. So there's so much there that happened then that's still relevant now that I think that it will allow people to make connections and to see their own experience and interests.
So that those are so many reasons why we should pick up this book. Are there any other final thoughts you would want to say about Alice Dunbar Nelson, her life, her legacy, this book, your efforts to make her life come to life on paper?
I think another thing that I want to emphasize is there are two things. One is that she was a survivor of domestic violence. Mm. So how she survived that and how she rose above it to do so much work is something that I hope that people will find inspirational. And also the fact that she was a woman who also understood the importance of finding moments of relaxation and peace for herself through nature and through meditation and writing in her diary. There's so much to be learned from this ancestor about how she did that and why she did it and how she accomplished what she accomplished by demanding that she have space for herself.
Can you expand upon that? Because so many times all of us who are out there doing work and doing social impact work, empowerment work, also people who are in our various professions, we think we have to go nonstop without rest and relaxation. And we do need that in order to rejuvenate. What type of, how does she justify her need for that to herself, not just to others, but to herself?
I don't think that she ever thought that she had to justify her actions to anyone, first of all. So she was unapologetic.
That's it.
And quite a bit of the work that she did and how she lived her life. Mm-hmm. So that's one. I love that attitude and that fierceness mm-hmm. about her. Mm-hmm. And so she made travel to a conference and leave the conference and go for a nature walk and then write about it later. Mm-hmm. So there were layers of how she engaged with the beauty around her and the fact that she looked for beauty and saw it mm-hmm. And embraced it and indulged in it was something that I didn't notice until I got near the end of writing the book. And so I went back and added some pieces on it because I just think that is so important for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Taking time for yourself, taking mm-hmm. moments out for yourself in small ways and big ways, you know, mm-hmm. small ways, taking a walk, reading a book, writing in your journal, big ways, just taking off for a few days and mm-hmm. going somewhere where you enjoy yourself. Well, so please tell us how we will purchase the book. Again, this is Professor Tara T. Green, Love, Activism, and the Respectable Life of Alice Dunbar Nelson.
Yes, well, you can get it from Amazon, your local bookstore, and you can visit me. I have links at www.drtaragreen.com. That's drtaragreen.com.
Sounds great. And I hope all of you will pick up this book. It is a wonderful biography of Alice Dunbar Nelson, and we can all learn so much about the life and legacy of this woman. And we really appreciate you, Professor Green, because I know a lot of love, effort, sweat, energy, a lot of energy went into writing this work. And we really appreciate your passion and your desire to get it done. So, Professor Green, you being a college professor, I know you can Ace, this part of portion of our interview, when we talk about providing students strategies for college success. So could you please tell us what college or colleges did you attend? What were your major or majors and degrees? And then tell us, what is that strategy you would give students to ensure that they're successful in college?
Well, sure. I attended Dillard University, got a BA in English. I got a master's and PhD in English from Louisiana State University.
And so what is your strategy?
My strategy for students is to connect as much as possible with professors, to look for internships, and to connect with the career services. And what I'm really saying here is to build a network, a community of people who can provide you with information about opportunities that may exist for you to be able to get the experience that you need as you move through your college experience, but also preparing for your post-college experience.
Great advice. Make sure that you connect with your professors. Your professors are the ones who know in advance all of those internship opportunities, scholarship opportunities, professional opportunities. So make sure you connect with your professors, connect with internships, and also connect with your career services. All of these connections will really help you to build your knowledge and experience and prepare you for your professional careers. Thank you so much, Professor Green. It's wonderful having you here on the Empowerment Zone.
Thank you. Have a good day.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terrion Gully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.